Thank you for listening to the IP Market Podcast. I'm your host, Sky Cassidy. Carla Jo Helms, our co-host, will be out today, but we'll be talking about the art and science of digital marketing with Vicky Sarmiento. Vicky is a digital marketing and communications expert with a decade of experience in the B2B and social impact space. She's currently the marketing manager at FeedMob, where she spearheads branding, content, and digital campaign strategies. She's a proud Women in Tech mentor, nonprofit board member, and has co-produced and emceed TEDx Peace Plaza in San Francisco. Vicky, we're super excited to have you with us today. Thanks for joining.
I'm excited to be here. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk about digital marketing as it pertains to data as well as creative. So it'll be a fun conversation to have.
Fantastic. Before we really get into digital marketing and the technology of it all and everything, can you tell us a little bit of your story, kind of how you got into marketing, how you got where you're at? You've got quite a background here.
Yeah, sure. Man, I'm dating myself a little bit over 10 years ago. I started my career out in the consulting world in Wall Street. So I worked for a consulting firm that specifically catered to the higher education industry, but we ran their endowments, their financials, their retirement plans. And I started out as an account manager, wanting to do more marketing, business development, communication, something that was a little bit more, you know, people facing on a regular basis. We had a small marketing department at the time. This was like 2007. So really, pay-per-click, and I mean, people weren't even taking LinkedIn very seriously at the time. I remember going up to my C-levels and saying, oh, I think we should take LinkedIn seriously. And they, you know, they kind of just looked at me like, oh, you're probably a young person that likes Facebook.
They said, focus on Google Plus. That's where it's at. If that even existed yet.
Exactly. So I worked with our principals at the time to launch an omni-channel marketing campaign. And that was really my first taste into demand gen as it pertained to the B2B world. So we developed a market research study. We distributed that market research study across different channels, email, app, communications, press. We got a press shop in to help us make sure that we were advertising correctly across different channels. Again, you know, digital and paid was in a medium that I think a lot of the businesses were investing in, especially businesses in Wall Street. But it was a huge success. We doubled our revenue in a couple of years. I became director of business development for that firm, and it was great. You know, we became market leaders. We won all sorts of awards, and I really fell in love with lead gen and making sure that we had really crisp, wonderful content for our audience that helped them. Right, that was about them. It wasn't necessarily about just our bottom line. Simon Sinek talks about this. I don't know if you've ever read his book, Start With The Why, right? Yeah. So really starting with the why was figuring out how can I help my clients? How can I help my customers? So that was my first kind of entry into it, but I got an opportunity that I couldn't refuse at the time. I was offered a role as the press secretary for the Senate Majority Leader in New York State. I had to take it because it was a really exciting opportunity to work with press and media, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, NPR, make sure that, we were placed all in the right areas, ran different campaigns, worked with the policy department. That was an exciting year of my life, being a part of campaigns and really interfacing with media and press and communications as it relates to a personal brand, right? In that manner, the politician's brand. After that, I got a lot of opportunities. I went back to New York City because I was at Albany at the time. It was kind of slow for me. You know, I wanted to really make sure that I was growing with the trend of digital. And as you can imagine, you know, there are certain industries and market sectors that are a little bit slower to adapt digital mediums, right? A/B testing, take these things seriously. And so I really wanted to focus my energy in the startup world, the small business world, the tech world. And so for a couple of years, I did everything and anything. I took a pay cut. I read all the books, right? Was following Rand Fishkin around obsessively. And I remember just saying to people, hey, I'll run your digital marketing campaign, you know, for a chicken leg. Just to, I need experience. I want to be able to do
what
it.
What year do you think we were in there? Around what year?
I would say 2012, 2013, when I just started doing, you know, working for businesses that wanted to increase their presence in their community and didn't really know how to use Facebook for that and didn't really understand pay-per-click. So I really started doing that, made my mistakes, but also had successes. And then I started to slowly kind of come up with my portfolio. I got a lot of different opportunities working for then tech startups, right? So we kind of transitioned to tech startups with proper product managers and folks that were working with me to make sure that execution was scaling. And that, I got in touch with mentors. I fortunately met the right people that coached me along. And I moved to Silicon Valley a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, to really be in the thick of things in the startup world, working for a digital health startup and now working in mobile ad tech. So a lot of my journey has been around, hey, graduate from college, don't really know what I want to do. I definitely want to be in front of people with marketing communications. How am I going to do that in an interesting way that I think is abreast with the times, that I think is current and can give me the kind of growth and learning path that I think is most exciting.
You got bit by the digital marketing bug really early on marketing kind of, and then just gravitated more and more into it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think part of that too is, so I'm an older, I'm classified by Nielsen as being an older millennial, right? So we're older millennials and we grew up with the internet, right? I mean, remember pre-Google's like Alta Vista, mm-hmm. Internet Explorer. And so, I think our generation is fascinated by the inbound nature of queries and also the nature of our digital economy being customer and client centric. And I say that because, you know, I think it's a really exciting time to be a marketer. You're not catering to folks that don't have a need for you. You're doing the opposite. You're trying to find people whose lives you can positively impact. And I think that is the real power of the conversation that digital marketing brings, right? It's this real time, I can identify the people that really need my help and my expertise, and I can help them with their businesses, you know, with whatever personal branding they need, et cetera. So I think it's really exciting to have this digital ecosystem that really is kind of real time conversation between a marketer and customers. Yeah.
It allows you to get in front of a lot of the right people, right?
100%. A lot of the right people. Right. I mean, I think that there are some startups that still do this, but right, cold calling was really big when I first started my career. It was kind of, that was your inbound, you know, it was really like outbound, right? I mean, but it wasn't, people were not thinking about content strategy in the same way that they're doing today. People didn't even really, you know, they didn't have pixels. They didn't have things that were really tracking things.
So MarTech wasn't there yet. Yeah. It hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah. You just had you literally had a list and you hoped to God that you purchased the right list. And most of them were really bad. you got your associates to make code calls all day and all night, hoping that, you know, one or two would work out. So
cold calling's coming back. Be careful. That's going to become popular again.
I was in a class at Alchemist Accelerator. So they're a big B2B tech accelerator here in the Valley. And I remember sitting there and there was a really successful startup guy and he was like, code calling, and it's not for everybody, but if you know that model is right for you, then spending all, having your salesperson code call all day, and you know that the one line of business you're closing is like $300,000, maybe that's worth it. Yeah. So that's, you know, I will caveat that with, right, you gotta work on the channels that really work for you, and that's really where strategy and foundation comes
in. Has its place. Yeah, they all have their place. Now, digital marketing, there's so many options now. Before we get into digital marketing, one more thing: FeedMob, where you're working now. Can you speak a little bit about what they do at FeedMob? I believe you guys handle both business and consumer marketing. Is that right?
So we, our clients are really Fortune 100 tech companies, although we represent all brands, but we're specific to mobile. That's our area of expertise. So FeedMob is a performance-driven mobile demand gen company, and we focus on delivering radically transparent growth solutions to our clients. So I say radically transparent. We actually just rebranded our mission. I say radically transparent because you know this as an entrepreneur and as a marketer. There's a ton of fraud out there, right? There's bots everywhere. I remember naively, I started out in digital marketing and I remember tracking my traffic and being so happy. Oh, wow. Look at, we have 100,000 new users coming into our website, but 70% of them were bots. Right now in the mobile ecosystem, because we don't have a very regulated system when it comes to traffic, a lot of fraud is happening. And so we specialize in helping our clients identify where fraud is so that they are protecting their investment. There are just billions of dollars that are spent by advertisers, by big companies every year. And billions of those dollars are unfortunately lost to mobile ad fraud. Yeah. There was almost $5 billion in 2018 that was attributed to mobile ad fraud. And that more than doubled from the previous year. And I think we know why, right? Because we're becoming more mobile. Businesses are spending more money on the mobile ecosystem and scaling and getting users that way. But unfortunately, with the good comes bad. And the bad players are very good at being bad. And I say that, there's a really interesting article by a reporter called, his name is Craig Silverman. It came out in Q4 of last year by BuzzFeed. There was an investigation with the FBI. And we got really excited here at FeedMob because, now it's becoming a little bit more mainstream.
It speaks to your business model, too. It says, this is why we're here, kind of, yeah.
Exactly. So big investigation, and they found that not only was there fraud being committed by very sophisticated algorithms, that modeled human behavioral elements. So you could even, you can even detect behaviorally that this person was not a real user. But there were shell companies created all over the world, and those shell companies were generating billions of dollars in revenue. Millions of dollars in revenue from multiple companies without the companies even knowing. And this was a huge investigation. It involved the FBI, the Department of Justice, Google, 20 other really large ad tech companies. And so this speaks to the gravity of what we're facing right now in the market. It's funny because in the beginning of the conversation, I said, it's a really exciting time to be a marketer, but it's also a really eye-opening time, right? It's kind of like the post-truth time of traffic.
Yeah. I mean, sales at one point was everything. You barely heard about marketing. It was in the background. And then sales kind of got a bad name, as I think Hollywood's partly to blame because the actual salesperson isn't very exciting. So all the movies are about con artists, but they call it sales. So everybody thinks sales is a con now. That's what salespeople are, con artists. Like, no, there's real salespeople there to get you a real solution, get you the right product and whatnot. But I think marketing might be going towards that. People don't trust it anymore.
Yeah.
Here we're paranoid about Google AdWords. Even the big companies, you're thinking, oh, just because they're big doesn't mean there isn't something in there that's designed to, like you said, you see 100,000 people hit your site. How many of those are real people? How many of those are bots? How many of those are bots designed by some sales manager at an ad company that just wanted to boost their numbers, but there's only so many people on that keyword. So they got to do something to get their numbers up. They can artificially increase the number of, quote unquote, people trafficking. See, I always, when I see affiliate, it scares me. Most of that fraud stuff, I think, has been done through affiliate networks because they can say, oh, we sign up for this affiliate network. Now all we have to do is push traffic through. And then all we have to do is make traffic. We could go out and do the hard work to attract people, or we could just make traffic up.
Yeah. And I think that's where, I got really excited when I was shopping around and meeting, basically meeting the founders of FeedMob, because they were focusing on developing not only a team that would have a consultative approach with our clients, but a team that's backed by really sophisticated and amazing technology. And that's where, right, the push and the pull is going to be. How are we going to build an infrastructure and a technology that will be able to identify and test, you talked about affiliates, test networks frequently, just like in marketing, we test our audience frequently. Well, we should be doing that with the kind of spend that, you know, if we're spending, if a company's spending $1 million a month, we should be able to test and come back and say, okay, this is scalable. This is not working. This is kind of fishy. Here are the patterns that we're observing. Right. We have sophisticated algorithms for, you know, shoe selling at Instagram. We should definitely have sophisticated tools that can identify fraudulent behavior. So that's really our goal here at FeedMob. And I'm really excited to be a part of the branding team and helping them rebrand and definitely spread the word. So that's great. Yeah,
I guess all the MarTech allows for a lot of really exciting things, but and smaller companies to scale stuff. But now everybody out there that's committing fraud can scale very easily also. They basically can take advantage of these MarTech things. You know, all the little loopholes in every new technology are always there for every con man and fraudster to take advantage of. So you're saying FeedMob has a lot of transparency to kind of help combat that with their clients. That's great. Yeah. With your clients, how much of the mobile ad stuff, and I guess we're getting in right into the digital marketing now. We talked about a lot of other stuff first, but how much of the mobile ad stuff that you do is B2B versus B2C?
You know, I'd have to run the numbers as far as percentage-wise, but so we work with apps, and a lot of the apps are B2C. So they're gaming apps, they're utility apps, they're social media apps, right? So we work with the actual user acquisition managers at these companies to make sure that they're scaling appropriately, they're scaling responsibly, and to also make sure that they really understand the legitimacy of their traffic. And I mean, essentially we take the burden off of what they would have had to do. And I got to tell you, as a marketer myself, having to figure out, okay, where should I advertise? What sorts of networks should I go to? Okay, should I hire an agency? Should I hire a consultant? I mean, there's all sorts of things that you need to do on your day-to-day, especially if you have a smaller team, you know. But even with a large-scale team, right, I mean, we have a number of people that work on every account. And, you know, we have over 50 people worldwide. And each of our teams, it's not like, right, there's one single point of contact, but there are a lot of resources that come into our clients' accounts. And so if you imagine that if they had to do it themselves, that means that they would have to test every network themselves every week. They'd have to also come up with a product that's keeping abreast of the new trends in fraud. I hate to say that there are new trends in fraud, but there's something new that's, if it's not click spamming, it's something else. If it, you know, it's SDK spoof, the list gets longer and longer.
That's a great newsletter, by the way. What's trending in fraud this week?
Yeah. It's like, what's trending in fraud this week? So I mean, most of the companies that we work with are more B2C, but we do work with the marketer and the business division of these companies in order to make sure that they're scaling appropriately and strategically. Yeah.
I guess the more fraud there is in a space, the more you need a guide, because I mean, with the internet digital marketing, every company can go on and just do stuff themselves. But
yeah, that's 100%.
In a space where there's a lot of fraud, there's a much greater chance you're going to go on and just be throwing your money away to some scam artist somewhere rather than actually getting results for it.
Yeah. And I think people, I mean, the clients that we work with are, I mean, very, very intelligent, and, you know, I mean, they've, lots of folks are heads of departments or right directors of departments. And I think as it gets more, people are now understanding, okay, we know that this is a problem. We've seen that this has been a problem, but now is the time where, okay, we really need to do our due diligence. And so what does that look like? And I think that the build of what that due diligence looks like is really going to get solidified in the next decade, maybe even less than that, because of the amount of money that is being lost every year. I mean, this is not a very regulated industry, but I remember reading somewhere that next to illicit drug trafficking, this is the most profitable. Like ad fraud is the most profitable industry. Is that crazy? Yeah. So you know, when you look at the numbers and the way that it adversely affects advertisers which means that it, you know, on a larger scale, it adversely affects businesses because they're not actually getting users; they're just paying for something that's not there. So, you know, it's a whole pattern, and I think that you're going to see this unravel, particularly in mobile. Certainly, you know, I mean, this is a problem in desktop, etc. But you're going to see that unravel in the next years. So it's an exciting time, also scary time, but exciting time.
So that's really interesting, really scary. Because I know we're paranoid over here, but you're kind of reinforcing our paranoia. We're not paranoid, we're just cautious.
Remember, we're starting with the why, so you know we're happy to, it's a problem, and it's an interesting, really interesting problem to solve, right? Data scientists, data is involved, heavy data analysis to figure out what are the patterns, and I think that, you know, that's a really interesting problem to solve, so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it exists in every space. It's not like it's only exists it there. Anywhere where there's money, there's going to be people trying to commit fraud to get it. I know In our space, we provide business contact information. We ran into a company just the other day that thought their data was amazing. They were selling data. They had a great level of accuracy. Their emails don't bounce. You know, they say, our emails don't bounce. We have fantastic data. We look into the data and we say, yeah, your emails don't bounce because apparently you've developed a technique for collecting emails that won't bounce. An email not bouncing doesn't mean the person's still there. And that's one of those areas
exactly. Where, you know,
that industry's changed over time. It used to be if an email didn't bounce, then the person was there. It was good.
Right.
And then things adjust. Now a large portion of emails won't bounce. You'll never know. In fact, it's designed to not tell you if the person's there anymore. But if they just keep removing the ones that do bounce and only keep the ones that don't, eventually they just ended up with a giant list that it isn't a new business list. Their clients can go and send campaigns out to it and they won't get bounces and they'll be happy and they can use the, you know, the high-end tools that really look at the bounces closely and, you know, a HubSpot or something like that. And the campaign will be fine because these emails are all designed not to bounce and they don't go anywhere. I mean, it's one step away from just creating massive amounts of fake emails yourself to assure they won't bounce.
100%.
It's very 100%. Similar to the ad fraud. Exactly. Yeah, people. Yeah. I don't think these people did it intentionally. They just weren't that good at the data. They didn't bother to look into it that far. And I'm sure their clients are saying, "Hey, this is great. Emails aren't bouncing, but we also aren't getting any business from it. That's odd."
Weird that we have 100,000 downloads and no one is making a post purchase. This is weird. Yeah. So
we send 100,000 emails, zero bounce. But also we don't see any traffic.
No one's replying 100%.
Actually, now they even get traffic from the website and it's not fraudulent. It's the filters are checking the links to make sure that the links are accurate and they don't go somewhere that has a virus on it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So they'll actually see traffic. Oh, we got a bunch of clicks coming through. That's great. Yeah, you can collect emails that will just, all they'll do is not bounce and click through to your website. And you'll get the traffic and everything, but you'll get no sales coming through from it.
Exactly. And that's a problem. Yeah.
Even with all the MarTech we have, a lot of people don't track it that far. Or by the time somebody finds out because all the other numbers look good, they've moved on to another company. It's you know, we made a joke recently in one of our, what we call Marketing Marvin. He's the world's worst marketer. He was bragging. We do this little cartoon strip. He was bragging about how he was really moving up and you know, progressing in his career because he'd been at five companies in the last 3 years. So he was in high demand. pretty soon he was going to get move somewhere and move up to the manager level. And it's like, yeah, you see a lot of people that way in marketing. I think they shift around constantly and kind of stay ahead of the lack of actual results in their marketing. And I always say that's a really bad sign when you see a marketer that's been at, you know, five companies in 3 years, it doesn't mean they're in demand. It means they're on the run.
Yeah.
getting back to the kind of core of digital marketing.
Over
some of the basic stuff here on, not necessarily what you guys do at FeedMob, but let's talk about digital in general, the different platforms that you've worked with, kind of your favorite platforms, maybe that kind of stuff.
Oh man. I've worked with so many. Okay, so I'm going to say what I usually say to folks when they ask me what they should use. It depends. It's like it just depends on the size of your company. Are you a startup? Are you a big enterprise company? Because different tools are going to cater to your type of business. I am a really big HubSpot fan. So that's a marketing automation tool. They have a sales CRM, but they also have a marketing automation tool. Now I say that because I'm a B2B marketer, and I think that the best business to business marketing divisions work very closely with their sales team. And I say that because in the beginning of any marketing cycle, there is going to be eventually some sort of trigger that you hand off into sales, right? And that's you designing your own funnel and figuring out what your attribution model is. But I like HubSpot because I've worked with small and medium-sized businesses. Now, I'm going to caveat that with their Salesforce and Marketo out there, and larger scale businesses have said, and that this is just hearsay from, you know, the marketing world, right? You know, a lot of marketers in the marketing world, that they can host their data more appropriately because there's just much more coming in. But I really like HubSpot because I think that their tools are user friendly. They make marketing automation really easily. There's lead gen scoring that you can build that's customizable. I think that they really import your data in a seamless manner. And they give you, you know, they give you a dedicated rep, and they always give you a technical channel. So I do think that HubSpot, if you are ready for that stage, now again, I say ready, and do you have email lists? Do you have a specific set of data that you want to start tracking? Have you built out your funnel? So that's, I mean, I think that getting to the automation tools, you need to start with step zero, which is your foundation as a marketer. And working for startups and medium-sized businesses, it's, you know, a lot, you'd be surprised, a lot of people don't identify who their audience is. They don't know, they've never went through persona building. It's right, just the basic, yeah. Hey, where are we going to scale? I mean, where are we looking to grow? and also, now I have my audience that's identified, I've done some market research, right? I've read Nielsen, I've read different articles about my base. If this millennials, maybe it's an older Gen X, right? You have to identify that with your C-levels. And once you get that, you can then say, okay, what social media channels are they using? What sorts of advertising mediums makes the most sense? In the B2B world, LinkedIn is very popular, right? Because professionals go on LinkedIn, right?
But very expensive, and they want to reach,
but they're very expensive. Exactly. Yeah.
Although if you're getting your value's worth, you really have to crunch down, like we were talking about before. Very expensive, but per, you know, break it down, not, I guess one of their salespeople would probably tell you, you know, what's the value of the lead versus you can get 10 leads for the same cost somewhere else. But if nine and a half out of 10 aren't real people, what good does that do you?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So tools, I mean, typically when a website is built, I always like to make sure that you have your Google Analytics in there, Google Search Console. That's just basic low-hanging fruit, right? They're free tools. You can get the crawlers in place to figure out what people are searching for. Once you identify, like I said, once you identify your audience and your holistic strategy, and it's really important to come up with a strategy, right? You can't just say, oh, let's come up with flyers. I think that this is my target demographic. Let's go after them. It really needs to be a very specific strategy that you need to work with in tandem with your stakeholders on creating. But once you have that, right, you can identify, all right, now I've built my website. Now I have Google Analytics, Search Console, all of the webmaster tools I need. Maybe you put in Hotjar, right? That's heat mapping. You can see kind of for every page in your website where folks are going. You also want to make sure that any sort of call to action is linked to something that's trackable. So whether it's MailChimp or, you know, if you go with an automation tool like HubSpot, you need to make sure that it's connected to your website. In a way that you're able to track the behavior of the folks that are going into your site. But once you identify the advertising mediums, you then need to make sure, right, like, okay, is my Google business set up? Is there, right, do I have, if I want to go down the Instagram route, do I have the business account set up? Okay, is there, I need to now figure out how to implement the pixel in the back end of my website, right? So that foundational layer is really important, and it's so easy to not do that early on. But the more data you have, the better you will be at building your marketing strategy and iterating in the future. Now, I say that because I cannot tell you how many people and how many clients and companies have come up to me and said, hey, I want to increase our leads by 50% by the end of the year. And you know, I need to go back to them and say, well, what's your data looking like? And they have no idea. So in order to
say, please tell me you get one lead a year, because I can make it two, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, working on your KPIs, right, your key performance indicators, can only really be done if you have a base foundation of an understanding of what is even realistic. How many people really are coming to our website? Okay, right. Of those amount of people that are coming to our website, really, how many leads are we getting from there? Okay, then you can say month over month, I think it's realistic to increase this by 5%, whatever your KPI is. But what's until you have...
What's the market out there? You mentioned crawlers earlier to figure out what people are searching for. You can also figure out what people are searching for overall online. And if you, know, if you expect to increase your leads past the amount of people searching for those terms online through digital marketing, good luck, because if they're not there, I don't know how you're going to, you know, unless you put up a billboard driving them online to search for those terms, you kind of have to know what the market is, I guess. So back to the fraud, you touched on something that made me think, you know, people are afraid of fraud in digital marketing, but what do you think about fraud versus just folly, I guess I'd say, versus people saying, oh, I want to double my, you know, my leads, so I'm going to put twice as much money into XYZ, and they're not basically the leads are bleeding out through their system somewhere because they're throwing attention at something, but they don't have it set up properly. You said, being able to track the call to actions, that kind of stuff. You can throw a lot of money somewhere and most of it bleeds away just because you didn't put a tracking link in the site. Do you think fraud is a bigger problem, or do you think just people not setting it up to actually take advantage of what they're pouring money into?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little bit of both. Fraud is a little bit more sophisticated in that, you know, tracking individual people visiting your website gets more finessed as you run your marketing campaign. Right, you get their information, you know exactly who they are and what their title is, etc. But in the meantime, there's a lot of traffic coming in, unless you participate in something illegal, like, you know, stalking every individual's phone, which is not, you know, not accessible because of privacy laws. Fraud is going to happen, you know, and so getting third-party tools and vendors and folks that are experts in the space to really help you, I think, is really paramount, especially as the industry is evolving every day. And so it's good to have somebody that's in there with you every day that really is making this exactly what they work on and, you know, they live and breathe. As far as setting it up, I think every marketer has set something up incorrectly. Everyone. There is not a marketer that has even made it to their senior level ranks in their company that hasn't done something incorrectly with regards to their tracking and attribution.
Yeah. We were talking about startups earlier and a similar thing came up. It was, you probably don't want to work with a marketer that hasn't set something up improperly. It just means they haven't done enough.
That's 100% accurate. Because every system is different. And the thing with advertising tools is they change all the time. You know, all of a sudden now LinkedIn has a dashboard, right? Whereas Facebook had a business dashboard for a while. And so there's this constant learning curve that excites me, as you know, that's part of the reason why I went into digital marketing. I was like, oh great, lifelong learning, because it's never going to end, right? But maybe daunting. And so it's good, it's really important to take a step back and understand realistic expectations and build your foundation correctly. Now, does that mean that you're going to make mistakes, but you don't have to lay the foundation of 10 different channels to begin. Just start out small, right? I mean, make sure that you have your base in place, right? So like I said, right, Google Analytics, Google Search Console, make sure that you understand how to use search tools, right? People use Uber Suggest. I've heard really good things about that. Google Keyword Planner, if you have a bigger budget, SEM Rush, right? Like really understand, okay, how can I couple that with my overall marketing strategy when it comes to advertising and when it comes to content? So that's, you know, I would say it's twofold. I mean, it's half and half, right? Like fraud is a little bit more sophisticated of an answer, because I do think that it's just going to be there, unfortunately, but we're going to try our best to combat it by getting more intelligent ourselves as marketers, in this ecosystem. But as far as doing the groundwork, you have to take your time to do it. Don't rush, you know, just because if your VP and CEO or director are saying, oh, we need to get this done, you know, in a month, give them a timeline, you know, give them the pros and cons. I mean, I think that that's something I made a huge mistake in the beginning of my career by not advocating for myself intelligently, right? Now, that doesn't mean that you go to your stakeholder and you say, oh, I think you're wrong. It just means you really need to have an understanding of how long these things take. And right. and everybody thinks marketing takes a day.
So if they say, I need it in a month, maybe you tell them, hey, I need a month and a half. I need 2 months. Don't say no. Don't say you won't do it. Yeah, you can do your best, but really you need 2 months, a month and a half, whatever it is you feel like you actually need.
Or you say, hey, here I can do these two things very well. Right. Or I can do these five, maybe get it up and running, but they won't be 100% perfect.
Yeah. In a month, I can get this set up and then I'll add these other things as we go along. I guess I was thinking about the fraud, and I hate to talk too much about fraud, but they're looking for low-hanging fruit. So you may make mistakes, you may open yourself up at some point. As long as you're constantly reviewing stuff, when things don't make sense, you look into them. I think that's the number one thing for us here is when something doesn't make sense, we look at something, we're just like, that's off. Something's off there. Look into it. Figure it out. Why is it off? It's almost always off for a reason. It isn't just, oh no, those numbers were just way off at that time, or they didn't seem like they made sense, but I'm sure they do. You look into it, you usually find that there's a reason it's off. And sometimes it's some sort of fraud, and sometimes it's just, oh, there was an adjustment made here by this MarTech or whatever it is.
Hey, this is Patrick McFadden, founder at Indispensable Marketing. If you're a professional service provider or a B2B business owner and you're struggling to attract your best clients and also charge a premium for your service, I think you should really check out our website at indispensablemarketing.com. You'll find some great resources there. And if you want to reach out, just click our free consultation button.
One thing you're talking about, putting stuff into different channels and what to go after and not trying to go after everything. I think this came up when we were talking once before, and I just made a note on it, that when you're starting out early on, it's a really good idea, and even for larger companies, but to find the undervalued channels. You were talking about being into LinkedIn early on and then really overinvesting on those. I was talking to somebody the other day about, and they were talking about, investing in Facebook ads and how for a long time, they were really undervalued, that anybody who knew what they were doing should have been pouring every dime they have into Facebook ads, because they should have cost twice as much. Yeah. The market wasn't aware of it. So they were coming in undervalued, but as long as people don't know it's there. And a lot of times with these technologies and new platforms and stuff, until people know about it, it's really undervalued, and you can get way more out of it than you see. Facebook really raising their prices up now because people are realizing, wow, look what you can do with this platform. You can really move people.
Well, I remember, I don't know, do you remember when, so folks were spending money on Facebook, and I remember the day that Facebook finally kind of had broken into the market, gotten so popular with their advertising that they took away the ability to advertise to all of your fans that you kind of built up in your own page. And that day was like the day of reckoning for everybody in digital marketing is just like up in arms. We built this, 100,000 followers ourselves organically. And now you're telling me that I need to pay to play to reach out to the people that have gone to me. Now I can only reach out to, I remember when that happened, it was like an earthquake. And so you're right. I mean, I think identifying channels early on that, again, can really give you the biggest bang for your buck as far as audience is concerned, and prospective customer, is really important. Because once a tool becomes popularized, now you don't have access to the same audience, and prices are going to go up. Right. It's just the way.
And it stops working too. It just thinks once everybody's there, now it doesn't work anymore because everybody's there. People get desensitized to it, and it's moving on to the next place where they're still open to receive your message, kind of.
100%, exactly.
So I think we're going to push straight through here, and there's going to be an odd, at some point, it's already happened to all the listeners, but there's going to be an odd break in the middle where we take a break. We'll just cut it in there. I've been enjoying talking to you so much. We didn't even stop to take a break here. So we'll keep pushing through, covering more on digital marketing here. Is there anything, it's such a big topic, we're jumping around all over the place. Is there anything you really want to get to and make sure we can dig into here?
I want to, just for folks who are listening that, are really trying to figure out, okay, how can I lay the foundation? I do want to maybe slow down and just talk about what, kind of like step zero, then 1, 2, 3. Because I think we went all over the place with regards to tools. And just because there's a lot, right? I mean, there's so many tools. There's a new social media automation platform, all of a sudden, you know, that's getting a lot of acclaim. Before you even go down the, okay, now I have, here's strategy and here are my tools, et cetera. Remember that as a marketer, you work with every department in a company. You know, I mean, I talk to our product people all the time. I talk to our salespeople all the time. I even talk to our engineers and I talk to our C-levels. Gathering momentum around a process is really important as a marketer. And I say this having worked, you know, in early stage startups, it's a very reactive atmosphere. But hopefully, when a company is ready for marketing, and I really believe this, they've already built their product. Okay. And I remember and I was talking to Sky, so this is even before we went on air, we were talking about startups. And I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of startups that don't have a product yet, and they try to get marketers and salespeople in, and they don't have they don't have product market fit. And so, you know, hopefully by the time you're ready for a real marketing strategy, you already have product market fit. You already have a great audience and a great product. I would say that ground zero is just making sure, can I market this? You know, I mean, and I say that because part of the reason why I love marketing now is because as much flack as I think sales and marketers get, I do think that customers are empowered now. You know, they can cut through your BS. They can know if your product is working or not. And so, so understanding that is really important even before you take a marketing job, right? Really understand, is this product really good? And does it have potential? Is there product market fit? That sort of thing. And then start a process. I mean, I'm a big process oriented person. I use, if you can come up with workflows, like I use draw.io to come up with workflows with different departments that will streamline things really well. And it'll get you to get to know each department and really respect their process as it relates to marketing. Because marketing is particular at small, medium-sized companies, you're going to have to lean on your product people to explain what your updates are so that you can tell your customers what's going on. You're going to have to lean on your C-levels to write really industry-leading articles because they've been around the block and their technical acumen is large, right? So that's, I would say that I just want to make sure that the audience understands, especially if you're a person that is starting to build out your marketing division, understand that working with different departments and having a process is really, really, really paramount. And then you can get to, cool, now I can come up with a strategy. Now I can define my audience and have my personas in place. And now I can figure out, okay, what foundational tracking do I need to build? And what's my realistic, what campaigns can I run the next few quarters? Maybe that means you don't run a campaign this quarter. Maybe it means like, I'm going to get
It seems like you're saying that the early on marketing is just much more kind of a boots on the ground. I guess once companies get bigger, the marketing kind of develop their products, develop its own gravity. And then the marketing is much less about the features and the product because it already has its own gravity and more about the branding and the general messaging and whatnot. So you're saying smaller companies, you know, you really, really need to know the product much more and be integrated with everybody else in the company so much more to do the marketing.
Yeah.
You can't just come up with a nice sounding catchphrase and expect people to show up and buy or something.
Yeah, I know that this is going to sound, I don't know if it's Oprah Winfrey-esque, but you got to believe in what you're marketing. You know, you have to understand and believe in what you're marketing because the kind of content that you develop, it's like day and night, right? You hire a marketer and they just make your case study pretty word. But if you don't believe in what you're writing and if you don't believe in your company or what you're representing, it's going to be more difficult for you to come up with really good original content that allows people to relate to you in such a way, right? Because it's, like I said, I think that customers and clients, they're very sophisticated buyers now. They can tell, you know, Sky doesn't really mean it. I don't even really know if he cares about it. They can tell, you know? And so I'm pretty adamant and I tell folks that I work with about this, about making sure that they really understand what they're delivering. And once you do that, you know, kind of dovetails into, okay, what's my realistic timeline and how can I work with my stakeholders to implement correctly? Yeah.
You mentioned draw.io, I think, in there.
Yeah, draw.io. It's a free tool. the Google plugin. I like to create workflows. So it's just kind of, okay, here's my little, I create a little bubble. You say, okay, this is step one. And then this department comes in, and it's a nice little free sketch feature that allows you, it's quite, you know, everybody probably that's listening understands whiteboarding. So this is kind of like whiteboarding, but you're digitizing the whiteboard. So that way you can present something more streamlined to whatever department, whatever stakeholder you're talking to. So I really like that. Of course, have a creative, you know, creative stack, right? I mean, if you're an Adobe user, good to have things like InDesign and Photoshop handy and, you know how to use them. If you are going to be working on website or mobile features, Adobe XD is kind of comparable to Sketch. Our designers use that. Organizationally, if it's Google Cloud or it's Draw.io or it's Asana, which is a company that, you know, uses organization within divisions so that, you know, it's streamlined workflows, use those things, right? I mean, come up with a really good, solid roadmap. And then you're creative, you know, if you want to start to create multimedia outside of blogging and case studies and white papers, get a good webinar tool, right? We're using Zoom now. We had mentioned this earlier, but GoTo Webinar is also something that I have used in the past that I think is good. Make sure you have A/B testing features once you start running campaigns. Optimizely is pretty popular. If you don't have the budget for Optimizely, this is another thing about digital marketing. There are so many growth hackers out there that there are free tools everywhere. You can go to abtesting.com. And if you're doing running small tests and you don't have a large audience, you can use abtesting.com. You can just plug in your numbers.
And half of these MarTechs have, yeah, even the large ones, have some sort of a freemium model. They have some sort
100%.
Sometimes it's exactly just a trial. But if you're small, mm-hmm, they probably have a free version designed for you because they want you in their platform once you get big. Yeah.
That's right. MailChimp. MailChimp is a great example. I think if the limitation is 2,000 emails, and if you have less than 2,000 emails in your list, you can use their service free. MailChimp's really interesting. They've rebranded, and now I think they're competing with the more holistic automation tools. Right now, they have landing pages and things like that, whereas it used to just be traditional email marketing. And I think that's pretty much going to be the way that all marketing automation tools are going to go. They're going to try to be like the one stop shop and get more users that way. So yeah, MailChimp is really good. But like I said, if you have the budget and the resources for HubSpot, you know, you have a couple members in your team that can help you with content and lead gen and the analytics, then I think HubSpot is really good. Social media. So assuming you have a social media strategy and you know what channels you want to use, I highly suggest a social media automation platform. Sprout Social is popular. It's pricier than Hootsuite, but Hootsuite is probably the most well-known. You know, it's been used for a while. Buffer is really popular, especially in the small startup world, because it's free to use and it's pretty user-friendly.
Just for the listeners also, we will grab these out and put them in the show notes so you don't have to frantically scribble down. And I'm probably too late. Half the people have already done that. But
yeah. I mean, if they're type A, like you and I, I'm sure that they are writing it down. But yeah, you'll have it in the show notes. So that's kind of off the top of my head, things that I can think of. But there's other, like I've heard great things about Wistia. Video is really big now. So they're an organization that handles videos, right? Like even 2-minute content video segments. But you can cut your own videos either through Final Cut or Premiere. Even iMovie. iMovie does a decent job. It just depends on what sort of production quality you want. But those are the tools that I've used. I am positive that I've used more tools because, you know, I've probably tried out so many tools throughout my career. And there are new tools that I'm going to try out probably in the next month. So it's, you know,
half the tools I've used aren't even here anymore, or they got bought by another company.
Yeah, exactly. So
you can't possibly use them all.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, again, right, I'm an enthusiastic digital marketer, but the other thing that's exciting about this era is just the amount of companies that are coming up with great products, and they want you as a user. So they'll give you a month for free. You know, you can test it out. They'll discount you just because they want you to use their products. So, you know, watch out for rising stars that are being written about. I don't know, you know, what industry blogs I read or Copy Blogger is really good for content writing. I really love Anne Handley and Brian Clark. anything Rand Fishkin is great. He's working for a new organization called Spark Toro, but he basically is, you know, the grandfather of all things SEO. He started SEO Moz. Neil Patel is a really good one. If you really want, I love Gary Vaynerchuk. He's, you know, controversial guy, but I think that
he's fun
to
listen to. Whether you like his ideas or not, he's very fun to listen to. So
he's hilarious. But Jab, 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 Right Hook, I think is a very good foundational book for folks that are just getting their feet wet in social media and trying to understand how to present it to stakeholders, but also how to really utilize each tool appropriately. Even though it's kind of, you know, that was written a few years ago, it's the principles around it are, you know, I think are really important.
I'll pile on and say, if somebody's trying to learn more about digital marketing, you said it moves so fast. You got to listen to a lot of books, listen to podcasts and stuff she's throwing
out. Listen to podcasts.
We cover marketing in general, but podcast is one of those areas that, you know, we put out a podcast for content. And we like having people like you come on and share all your ideas and everything you know. And I listen to so many of them. You know, I listen to audiobooks. I listen to podcasts. I don't have time to read. I'm a slow reader. So I just listen to an audiobook and I crank it up to 1.5 or 2 and blow through it. Same thing with podcasts. Most of them, you know, I'll sound a little bit like a chipmunk, but if you listen to this on a faster speed, your brain adjusts, you absorb it all, and you can get through more on your drive home or whatever.
I remember.
Stay up to date kind of on all the stuff.
There's a young, she's a young associate. She just started her career in marketing. She was reporting to me at the time, and I showed her that hack. I was like, you know, you don't, whenever you look at these tutorials, you can just 2x it. And she just, her jaw dropped. She's like, oh God, you're right. I can absorb this and I don't have to sit through everything.
But if you listen to it on the drive home, your spouse is going to be really annoyed because when you get home, you're speaking at 2x speed because your brain's running at 2x speed.
Yeah,
so be careful of that. Give yourself some tune down time.
Yeah. If you're like my husband, his eyes just kind of glaze over and he's like, can we stop talking about this?
And then a fun thing to do is to turn it back down to normal speed. Going to normal speed, it sounds like everybody's on Quaaludes. They're just talking. So you know, like, I could never listen to this. This is insane. How does anybody listen to it at normal speed?
Like, this is horrible. So yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, what is it, the luxury once tasted? The luxury of not having to listen to somebody speak very slowly. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Nothing.
You don't realize how slow regular speed speech is until you turn
it on. Yeah.
I'd say absorb the books you mentioned. People, just, you've got to absorb all that stuff, expose yourself to all that stuff.
And just, you know, constantly learn.
Yep. There's so much out there. Yep. So many ideas.
So much.
You know, grab onto what you can. There's great ones. People give it out for free. You know, you'd mentioned the platforms, and we talked about getting on platforms that are kind of undervalued. Mm-hmm. And you'd mentioned people, they will put stuff out there for free because they want your business. Same with all of these, you know, you have to buy books on Audible, or if they still have bookstores, I'm not sure. Amazon, I guess.
I saw a Barnes & Noble. I went to LA a few weekends ago and I was like, oh God, there's a Barnes & Noble.
Tourist attraction. You know, it's only there for tourists.
I know, it's crazy. but like, you know, like you're saying, Sky, right? Listen, there's podcasts. There's this podcast. Great, right? You're listening to different marketers all over the US and you're hearing about different strategies and tools. Listen to your podcasts, buy your books from authors who are experts, and just make sure you're always, there's so many industry blogs. I mean, so many industry blogs, you know, there's CMO, there's so many.
I find podcasts a great source for books. Every marketing podcast, every sales podcast, every business podcast I listen to, they're always mentioning books. Half the time the guests are authors, and you get to find out, oh, that's something I really should listen to. Yeah. You don't have to get, you know, 2 chapters into a book before you decide that you didn't really like it. You get a preview on a podcast. There's just so many people out there. They're always out there talking and spreading the knowledge for free, kind of. It's a terrible shame.
Yeah.
Not,
and that's how,
and obviously, you know, and anybody that's listening already knows this, so we're kind of speaking to the choir.
Yeah, exactly. but that's how you know, that's how you know that you're in the right industry. And earlier on in my career, I didn't know exactly whether I was like, okay, I like marketing, I like communications, I like being in front of people, but I don't know about this particular industry. But once I was in the industry that I knew, okay, this is my marriage, this is my life industry, is the industry that you can't stop talking about. You know, it's the industry that I'm reading a book right now called Hitmakers by Derek Thompson, and it's about the science of branding. And I do this on my leisure time. And so, you know, the things that you love are not going to be filtered by a 9-to-5 job. It's going to be a part of your interests and you know, who you are. So
if you don't talk about it at parties, find a new job, because you're obviously not interested. I mean, if you only talk about non-work stuff at parties, you're not interested in your work. That's not a good thing.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you. And I think a lot of people, they, especially, you know, young folks that I don't want to talk about work. I love talking about my job. And actually a lot of my friends love talking about their work. They love it. They love it. Right. And I think that, you know, how much time do we spend on our jobs? Yeah. How much time? If you think about the amount of time that you invest in your job, you better make sure that you really love what you do, because that's a large chunk of your life.
And I wouldn't say quit your job and follow your passion or something like that, but you got internet in front of you. Like, open it up. And there's plenty of sites that have all these jobs available. Find something that you want to talk about at parties, and you know, apply for a job there. It generally doesn't cost anything to run a search online and apply for a job. It's pretty easy to reach out to people and say, hey, I think I'd like to work with you. And guess what? Businesses want to hire people who say, I like what you do. I want to work there.
100%.
You know, not people who are going to be online searching for other jobs down work hours.
Anyway,
we got sidetracked a little bit. Before we finish here, I want to see if I can get a story from you. Either a story of something that was very successful, or a story of something that was a great failure, but maybe a good learning opportunity. This is normally where we go to a break and then come back and you'd have something in mind, but I'm just going to put you on the spot. We'll edit it out later. Take all the time you need.
Okay. Cause I was about to say, my God, I think that the people that are most judgmental about their work are the people that, you know, like I criticize my work all the time. So it's hard for me to talk about successes. Although, my mentors have said, you better get used to talking about your successes, right? I mean, you should be proud of them. Oh, man.
I'd say ask Gary Vee not to talk about his successes. Once you're successful, that's all people want to hear about.
It's so much easier for me to talk about my failure. So, okay, so let's start with that.
Either one. Yeah. Give me a failure. People love failures more than successes. I hate to tell you about it.
Yeah. I'll go through my failure. Yeah, because, you know, I'm like, okay, so let's start with my failure. So, not being ready for a marketing automation tool, right? So I worked for a smaller company, and we got funding, we had plenty of money, and I was only one person. And I remember thinking, oh, this marketing automation tool is going to solve all of my problems. Not true. What the marketing automation tool will do, so if you're using HubSpot or Marketo or whatever, is it will give you a platform whereby you have to have a strategy and sets of data to implement on the platform.
It needs a name. Automation insinuates, we've got a cartoon for Marketing Marvin on automation, marketing automation as well. Yeah. It insinuates you get to set it up and then you can go on vacation and it generates leads and stuff like that. They shouldn't call it marketing automation. They should just, there's got to be another name for it.
It's a platform that you automate somehow yourself. Like it's not...
Building a marketing house of cards or something. It doesn't have the same ring to it, but
exactly. I mean, that's what you're doing. You know, I mean, I didn't have a dedicated writing workflow structure, let alone a team. In marketing divisions, you're going to find one of two kinds of people, or both, right? I mean, you're going to find the folks that really love doing creative work, and they're always in their Adobes and or in their search. Keyword search tools trying to dig up content, or their buzz sumos, right? They're trying to figure out what folks are writing about, or you have your analytics people that, you know, so, I mean, some of them understand how to use Python as it relates to their big data sets and you know, generating the right KPIs, right? So you usually have a couple of those, and you know, I was by myself, and I remember thinking, wow, why did I try to, it's like I convinced somebody to purchase this, but one, right, like our C-levels didn't really have an understanding. This is another mistake I have made, you know, I made earlier on in my career. You got to make sure that you understand it so much so that you can ad nauseum explain it to your boss or your C-level stakeholder. They have to understand the gravity of how much time these things take, because oftentimes they don't know. And I'm not, you know, I'm not pointing at the boss saying, oh, you're a bad boss. I'm saying that they don't know.
And they may show up on Monday and say, we need digital marketing. I heard it on a podcast. Yeah, we need that. Go do it.
You know, but that's why they hired you. They hired you so that you can tell them, here's a breakdown of the data. Here's what we can realistically do. And here's how much time I need. Here's the resources I need. Here's how much it's going to cost. If you can't assume that the person that you're reporting to is doing the same daily activities. No, they're doing something different. That's why they hired you. So, you know, I think that not making sure that I was communicating effectively with, you know, my then boss about just the gravity of how much work was going to be involved in this, was mistake number one. Then mistake number two was realizing a marketing automation tool doesn't dismiss the work that takes to build the marketing automation tool. And you really need a team for that, or that's your full-time job and you don't do anything else in marketing, which if you're working for a small company, believe me, you're going to do other things. Okay. There's a deck that needs to be created. There's, oh God, there's like a news. Okay. We have to write up an article now. Right. So just make sure that when you're ready to invest in something like that, you have the infrastructure built. Right. Cause that whole year was a wash. Right. I was trying to do
by the name of marketing automation.
Don't get tricked. So that's
figure
that
out how
one.
It actually works.
100%. 100%. So that's, you know, probably right. Like one of my biggest failures. And I remember just leaving defeated that year because you couldn't even really implement a campaign because you didn't have the time or the resources to do so. I've had, you know, a lot of failures with just campaigns that I've run thinking that I knew what the outcome was of the test, right? Like, oh, this creative is definitely going to work over this creative. No, you know, hands down. And then I find out it's not. One of my favorite ones recently, a couple of years ago, I worked for a digital health organization. They were in mobile, but they worked with pediatricians and kids. And I remember running a creative splits test with two creatives. One was a child that was with her mom, a jovial kid. And then another picture of a doctor looking at a child. And so we were catering to doctors at the time, pediatricians. So it's no, you know, no brainer. Of course, like the kid that's with the mom, you know, is going to do well. And it turned out that actually doctors like seeing other doctors, at least in our audience. It was nice to have a kid, but seeing another doctor treat the child was really, really important, like way more so than just cute kids that seemed healthy and happy.
And that's where the A/B testing and whatnot comes in, because you may think you know the best way, but
100%.
Try another one too, because what if you're wrong? Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, like, you know, another thing too is like maybe those are just the doctors in California and San Francisco. What if we A/B test in New York? Totally different outcome. So you can't assume things about your data because you have no idea until you actually test and iterate.
We've seen like we're positive this is going to be the best messaging. The other message works way better for some reason. You can't figure it out. And sometimes it's some bizarre little aspect of one or the other that causes it to succeed or fail that you weren't even paying attention to. And then maybe 100%. You make a hybrid of them, but it's amazing what you learn when you're open to maybe what you think isn't the greatest idea and run it anyway, see what happens.
Exactly. Run it anyway and see what happens. Yeah. That's 100% correct. So that's, you know, and time again, failing at executing campaign when something like, you know, some big change happens on an advertising platform I'm using. But for example, when Facebook announced, oh, you can only really get to 10% of your audience in your fan page, keeping abreast of those things and those changes, GDPR, I mean, I should have done that earlier on in my career and then I didn't. And then what ends up happening is you have a client that's disgruntled because you spend all this time on setting up a campaign, but you're not actually looking at what's going on in the market. So again, really important. Stay abreast of what's going on since things are ever changing pretty much all the time. So those are a bunch of failures. I mean, I can go on and on. You know, I would say success-wise, running a campaign early on in my career when we ran that, I would say that. So early on in my career, I ran the market research study and I got like, you know, maybe we got 1,000 stakeholders to fill it out across the country and doing that groundwork as hard as it was, but then having the outcome of, well, we doubled revenue size and we actually talked about a problem that nobody has addressed based on our area of expertise. And then kind of convincing our stakeholders who were a little bit you can run with this. I don't know if it's going to succeed, right? Just advocating for myself. That was probably one of the highlights of my career because it taught me a lot of other things. And then the other campaigns in my career that were successful, I was like, okay, well, here's what I have to do. And this is how we need to measure it. And also this is something that our audience and our customers would like. That's probably, you know, that was a turning point in my career when I realized, oh, I can do this. it's crazy. Oh, I can do this. I could just try to do this. But I think that happens in every person's career. I'm sure, you know, you can probably point to the time in your career where you realized, wait a minute, I think the thing I can do for myself is teach myself, learn as much as possible, get mentored. But really at the end of the day, sorry, I was talking to my boss about this. I mean, your manager is going to try to figure out, okay, what are you doing during the week? But you, at the end of the day, they believe in you and they believe in your ability to execute and solve problems on your own and be resourceful. So just, you know, I mean, if anything you take out of this conversation of digital marketing, besides all of the other small minutia, right, like notes that we will have on the notes of this podcast, know that, right, when you, there's going to be a turning point in your career where you realize, like, I don't need that much handholding. They're investing in me because they believe in me as a professional. And that's kind of like the sky is going to be the limit. All of a sudden, you're just going to be reading nonstop and you're going to be learning things. You're going to be trying new things all the time. And that's the best sign of a marketer is your trial and error and your ability to just create, right? I mean, it's like saying, oh, I want to be a writer and I want to write content, but you never write content. You just, you have to really, I'm sorry, you have to suck at it. You have to suck at it for a little while or a while until you start getting the groove of things. You're like, okay, I'm getting better. So
that's how we started the podcast. You keep saying, we want to do this. Then you just go do it one day and
just do it.
One of our rules for leadership we have here is don't be a henchman. You can be a henchman, just you're not a leader then. If you want to be a leader, you can't be a henchman. You have to realize, you know, what you were saying, owning and knowing the process yourself. If your boss tells you to go do something with Google AdWords or LinkedIn advertising and you just go and do it, but you don't know what you're doing, you're a henchman. You're not in charge of anything. You're just following the instructions. You need to know, you said it earlier, you need to know better than they do what it is they sent you to do. That's why you were hired. Unless you're a henchman and your job is just take out the trash and then, okay, that's your job. You aspire to be more. You better learn it better than the people because they're paying you to know it better than them. They're paying you.
Exactly.
You know, people who work for me, I don't have them work for me so I can just tell them what to do all the time. I want them to be better at the tasks that they're hired for than I am. Otherwise, I would just sleep less or something. I don't know.
You
got to know it better than they do. Otherwise, what's your value? Your henchmen, we've all seen what happens with them. They're expendable.
Yeah, exactly. So audience members, I hope you don't take that for granted, right? Don't take that for granted and make sure you're, this is, you know, I mean, I'm sure you can speak to this, really important to make sure you have a good line of communication with your manager and that your manager is also a leader, right? Like you said, one of the things here is like no hench, but that includes the people that are leading the company. I mean, one of the biggest reasons besides the interesting product, interesting problem we're solving here at FeedMob, one of the big reasons it came in is because our culture is very growth oriented and we have really great leadership. You know, we have a team that invests in each other and it goes both ways. So listen, if you are with a manager that is investing in you and taking the time to give you opportunities, then you have to know that, well, they're hiring you so that, again, you can know two steps ahead of them and you can really help them do their job really well. So, you know, it's that sort of relationship that I think makes companies successful, everywhere in every department. Yeah.
And then aside from the general, we've covered so much just general business stuff, but again, digital marketing, I think we covered a lot of digital marketing here as well.
Yeah.
It's been a great episode. I want to get through a couple things here at the end. Anybody who wants to find Vicky, it's vickysarmiento.com. We'll put that in the show notes. Also, you can find her on LinkedIn, just put in the name and you'll find it. Her company is feedmob.com. This will all be in the show notes. We want to thank Vicky Sarmiento and thank all the listeners. And on behalf of the If You Market team, thanks for listening. And remember, if you market the shit out of it with digital marketing, they will come.
Yes, they will come. Carla, feel better. Hope you feel better. All right. Thank you so much.